Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Monday, March 27th. I'm Ray Graff. Support for Medical Monday comes from Dr. John Shen, providing personalized, multifaceted clinical plans working to help patients achieve a pain-free new year. envisionspinesurgery.com for details. Joining us this afternoon is Dr. Alexis Perlmutter, a dermatologist with Capital District Dermatology in Glenmont. Dr. Perlmutter specializes in both pediatric and adult dermatology, as well as dermatology surgery. The number to call is 800 if you have a question. That's 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Did you know skin is the biggest organ in your body? It's true. And we'll discuss all that coming up with Dr. Perlmutter and take your calls as well after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. In the studio this afternoon is Dr. Alex Perlmutter, a dermatologist with Capital District Dermatology in Glenmont, New York. Dr. Perlmutter is a board-certified dermatologist and fellow of the American Academy of Dermatology. She is also a board-certified pediatrician. She earned an MD from the University of Rochester School of Medicine and Dentistry. Dr. Perlmutter completed pediatrics residency at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia and a dermatology residency at Geisinger Medical Center, where she completed specialized training in pediatric dermatology. If you have a question today about your skin, give us a call, 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551, or feel free to email the program, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Dr. Perlmutter, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ray. Thanks for having me.
So great to have you here. It has been so tough for me to find someone of your skill set to be on this program, and you fell out of the sky, and we're so happy to have you here. Why do people get old and wrinkly?
Ooh.
What happens to the skin?
Yeah, good question. So just like every other organ in the body, as the skin ages, a sign of that aging is loss of collagen.
Oh, is that what it is?
And that's where the wrinkling comes in.
What's the most common thing you see in your practice?
Ooh. Probably people coming in for mole checks and screens for cancer.
Now, when someone comes in for a mole check, do you automatically have to biopsy, or can you look and say, well, this is not probably cancer?
Yeah, that's a good question. Most of the time, a board-certified dermatologist will have a good sense just by looking. And we have a tool we use, which is, it's called a dermatoscope. And the dermatoscope has a lens on it that magnifies the image as well as light kind of adds light to it and takes out some of the glare from the visible light in the room.
Uh-huh.
So we use our dermatoscope to help us, not just the naked eye. And with that knowledge, we can usually tell, but often we don't know, and we have to do a biopsy. So I'd say 8 times out of 10, we just know by looking, and maybe 20% of the time, if we're not sure, we have to take a biopsy.
It's Dermatology Today on Medical Monday. Dr. Alex Perlmutter joins us. The number is 800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. If I remember high school biology, and it was a long, long time ago, 3 layers to the skin, right?
Yeah.
Tell us about that and how that figures into what you do.
Good. So we think of it more as two. There's the epidermis, which is the very top layer of skin. And that's quite thin. Like we're talking millimeter, or maybe a max of a millimeter. And then underneath that, there's the dermis. And that's the bulk of the width of the skin. And as you move throughout the body, the width of those two parts is thinner or wider. So for example, our back is very, very thick skin, whereas our eyelids are the thinnest skin on the body. The bottoms of our feet and and our palms are actually the thickest skin on the body. But if you compare eyelid skin to back skin, because it's somewhat similar,
yeah,
you'll think about how different the difference is. And that's mostly in terms of the dermis, how thick the dermis is.
That's really interesting. While the phone lines are loading up, and we'll hit the phones very quickly because we have a ton of calls already, just clear up misconceptions about our need for sunlight and our need to protect ourselves from sunlight with sunscreen. I know a lot of people, I think they overdo it on the sunscreen, but maybe you're the doctor.
Well, we know that if you think about the term radiation, you think, oh, I should avoid that. And when we think about sunlight, we don't really think of it in terms of radiation, but it is. It's
right.
Ultraviolet radiation. And we really want to avoid the sun as much as possible to protect our skin. So that radiation that comes from the sun is not that dissimilar to the radiation that comes for example, if you're being treated with radiation for cancer. So we really, at all costs, for the skin's health, want to avoid radiation from the sun. That being said, we know that it makes us feel good. There's an endorphin burst that comes from being exposed to sunlight. We need about 20 minutes max of unprotected sunlight to
get
the vitamin D requirement that we... Yeah, that's
wow.
It. I know. And we can also get vitamin D from our intake, our dietary intake, too. So really...
But are people overdoing the skin? In other words, I got SPF 50, 70, 90 probably.
Yeah.
What's the minimum I need?
So good, that's a good question, too. And that's changed a little bit. We used to say 30 SPF is what you need. But between 30 and 50, you get a little extra bang for your buck. So probably the right number is about 50.
But 70 is overkill?
Well, yeah, kind of. The way to think about it is the SPF is a multiplier. So if you, Ray, would have been burned... in a minute, if you were in the sun midday, unprotected, no sunscreen on, then if you put SPF 50 on your face, you're going to be burned in 50 minutes. So it's sort of individualized to each person. So if someone really is fair, like they're a redhead and they don't have any very much pigment, let's say blue eyes, they might be better off with the 70 because it'll give them just that little extra time before they're going to burn.
Okay. You know, you're fairly young, but in my day, when I was a kid in the 70s, all the suburban moms would lie out on their folding vinyl lounges and put baby oil on themselves in the sun. People don't, as far as I know, do that anymore. Is the incidence of skin cancer going down because people are better educated now?
Not really.
No.
So the reason being is that people that were lying out in the 70s doing that are still alive. And they're getting skin cancers now. So the sun they got back then is, over time, it does genetic damage to the skin. And over time, we're still out in the sun. So, and as we age, we're more at risk for skin cancer. So those patients are all coming in now with skin cancer.
Dr. Alex Perlmutter joins us today from Capital District Dermatology in Glenmont. Let's grab a call or two before we hit the first break. 800-348-2551 is our number. We'll start in Pottersville, New York. Rachel, you're on.
Hi, how are you?
Pretty good. How are you?
I am doing well. Thank you.
You're on.
I'm calling because I have some unsightly scarring on my face. I had an infection that led to me trying to heal it on my own and various creams, but eventually just turned into several spots of unsightly scars, and I'm wondering if there's a product out there that you would recommend for me to use topically that could help in reducing these. They're kind of, it's the best way to describe it is like pitting scars, I guess.
Okay.
Hi, Rachel. How long ago did the scarring occur?
It started during COVID, where I got the infection, and then over time, I kept on trying to remedy it. My doctor put me on a variety of medications. There was an antibiotic that I took several times for dermal, which is commonly used for dermal use. It's called minocycline.
Sure.
I also talked. You've heard of it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I imagine.
Yep. I hope.
yeah. And then I also went on, I think it was Doxycycline. Well, something, there was one that was for 7 days and that kind of, or there was a really heavy duty, it was a heavy duty one that kind of knocked, you know, it didn't do well with my system, but in any case, nothing has, I've cleared up in the sense that I don't have anything going on, but I do have the scarring behind at this point. So
if it was that long ago, so we're talking maybe years and you have pitted scars. So scars are not all the same. There's pigment marks that are not technically scars, but people think of them as scars. So like if I had a pimple 2 months ago, the pimple goes away and then I have a little like dark pink mark on my face, for example, That's more of a, a pigment mark. It sounds like you, if you're describing them as pits, they truly are a contour change in the surface of your skin. And for that, you really need something not topical, something in the laser world or something in the peel world. So you'd have to see a doctor to either have a series of peels to try and regulate that contour imperfection on your face, or something like a laser, which will, again, smooth out that pit.
Rachel, thanks a lot. Tell me about these peels. It sounds painful.
They actually are not that bad.
No?
They can
sting
a little bit. Well, so I don't actually perform them currently. I don't really do any cosmetic dermatology, but I trained in doing them. So you essentially clean the face. And then some people, if you're going to do a very deep peel, there's three levels of peels: mild, moderate, and deep. If you're doing a deep peel, you almost have to be sedated, honestly. So if you're in the moderate or the mild level, some providers will give you an anesthetic on the face first, but most don't. You pretty much put the peel on, put the medicine on your face, which is the peel material. Let's say a glycolic acid peel.
Okay, it is acid of some kind.
It is an acid of some kind. Ew. Yeah, it's a chemical reaction. Right. And then sometimes there's a burning sensation for a minute or two while the peel is working, if you will, and then it's neutralized, and then there's no more pain.
Will I look younger if I do my whole head?
You would.
Really?
Yeah.
All right, let's try that. Yeah. Let's take a break and talk about that. 800-348-2551 is the number. Dr. Alex Perlmutter joins us today. We talk dermatology. We'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC. It's Medical Monday. We're joined today by Dr. Alex Perlmutter, a dermatologist with Capital District Dermatology in lovely Glenmont, New York. And let's grab a few emails here, and then we'll go back to the phones. Having fun so far?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right.
Great.
This is from Marion. I've seen over-the-counter tag removal products advertised. Do you think at-home products like these are safe and effective to remove skin tags?
Well, I guess what I'll say is all skin tags are not created equal. So there are some that are really tiny, and the old-fashioned way of taking those off is tying a piece of dental floss around it.
You're kidding me.
No.
I have dental floss.
Yeah, there you go.
All right.
But there are some that have a wider base, so a few millimeters. And if you try and use an over-the-counter product or tie that off yourself, you might create some substantial bleeding. So it's hard for me just to kind of answer that question and have it apply to all skin tags.
What is a skin tag anyway? I mean, I've seen them, but what is it really made out of? And Joe Mackowitz, our screener, is holding
up. Oh, look at that.
They're very nice, Joe. You should be very proud. That's good.
We could do a demonstration later. They are essentially just a little bit of fibrous tissue and collagen.
It's not cancer or anything.
No, it's just
annoying.
A little redundant extra skin. Yeah. Okay. And they tend to have a wider top and a little thinner stalk. So they tend to sit on a stalk, which is where the way that you treat it comes in. If the stalk is tiny enough, like I said, you could snip it at home, or there's over-the-counter freeze sprays, which you could use. But if they're wide, you might create significant bleeding, scabbing, pulling of the skin that could get infected.
Okay, but the over-the-counter stuff that Marion was asking about could be used?
Yeah, it's safe.
Liquid nitrogen would probably work really well.
Yes, yes. And we snip in the office with sterile scissors, of course, and then stop any bleeding that happens because of the snip.
We're joined today by Dr. Alex Perlmutter of Capital District Dermatology in Glenmont. This email from Steve: can you talk a bit about melanoma in situ? I was diagnosed with it on my ear 2 years ago. What is the risk for spread or recurrence? Why is it more common now? And that's from Steve.
That gets into the most serious kind of cancer that we treat. So that's melanoma.
Yeah.
And it's one of the most, I don't want to say this with certainty, but it's one of the most, not the most maybe, deadly cancers in the whole human body. So it's notoriously a very aggressive cancer, but they're different types. And so the person that wrote in today asked about a certain kind, which is a melanoma that's limited to the very top layer of skin, and that we say that's in situ or in situ. So those come from sun, and usually they're on a site of the body where there's a lot of sun exposure, such as the ear.
Yeah.
And the best thing about a diagnosis of melanoma in situ is that it's melanoma, so you know, it's a very serious cancer, but in situ implies that it's really the earliest you could have caught it, and it has not spread to the body. There are very uncommon situations where some melanoma cells might have escaped, and gotten into the dermis and then spread through the body, but those are exquisitely rare. So the survival of patients with melanoma in situ, 5-year survival, 10-year survival, is extremely high, on the order of 96%.
Okay.
I think the second part of the question is there more of this diagnosis?
Why,
now?
Yeah, why is there more? And we haven't ascertained that there is more. You can tell us.
There is more. Part of it probably has to do with what we discussed earlier, people in the 70s now reaching the age when all that cumulative sun is manifesting as skin cancers. And part of it is that maybe we're better at detecting it. So we have, ultimately, if I take a biopsy of a dark spot on someone's ear and send it to the lab, pathologists are getting better at reading those results and telling us whether it's a bad mole or it's melanoma.
Interesting. Okay, this email from Henry in Albany. Two-part question from Henry. Number of bottles over-the-counter stuff say they are great daily moisturizers. So should humans moisturize daily? That's part one.
Okay, we'll do that part.
Yeah.
That's a good question. The need to moisturize is kind of a funny thing. It gets into our need to clean ourselves. So all soaps, all washes are kind of disrupt the balance of the pH on our skin. And so they increase our risk to get dried out. So does the Albany weather, though, right? So we have cold air, we have dry air. Our water, some of it's harder than other areas. So if you live in Albany, for example, our water is less hard than if you lived in Schenectady. It just is a measure of how many magnesium ions are in the water. And so if you have hard water and you wash a lot and you live in a dry climate, your need to moisturize is increased. Similarly, as we get older, our skin just dries out.
Yeah.
So probably back in the old days, maybe people used something like, oils or... for example, if you want to be super, super kind of natural about it, you can use coconut oil, mineral oil. But the need to moisturize is really dependent on how much you wash, where you live, whether the humidity of your air is such that you're dried out just by being in your own home.
All right, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Devil's advocate. Is humanity, or at least Western civilization, washing too much?
Yeah, probably. And with the recent COVID epidemic or... existing COVID epidemic.
Yeah, I'm going to say it's in the rearview mirror now. Yeah. I'm not the Surgeon General.
Yeah, right. We really went overkill on washing.
Yeah.
So for sure. I mean, there's washing to avoid getting COVID, and then there's washing just to be hygienic, and those are probably two very different things.
All right, second part of Henry's question, and then we'll hit the phones again. We're joined by Dr. Alex Perlmutter, a dermatologist with Capital District Dermatology in Glenmont. Second part of Henry's question, if daily moisturizer is recommended, are there certain percentages of ingredients or certain ingredients to be on the lookout for? Like we've heard of aloe and all that stuff.
Yeah, so... I think the best way to answer that is you have to just trust that what's out there is safe and probably effective.
Do you?
I do, yeah. And really, it's what works for you. So the range of moisturizers is vast, and they can be kind of runny and wet, like a lotion that's very liquidy, or they can be very thick, like a balm or an ointment or an oil. And so they all work pretty well. Generally speaking, if you're using something thicker on your skin, it moisturizes better, but it's more greasy and sticky. And if you're using something thinner and runnier, like a lotion, then it is going to be less hydrating, less good as a moisturizer, but it won't be so sticky. So you really have to just kind of experiment. You can get the little trial size that you might get at CVS or Walgreens, one of the pharmacies, you know, for traveling. Get a couple of those and just see what kind works best for you. Because really, you could use, honestly, any of those products, and they probably will work quite well for moisturizing your skin.
Interesting. Let me ask you one last question about this. Is it better to moisturize your skin from within? In other words, just drink a lot of water. Hydrate the daylights out of yourself.
No.
Well, that won't help?
No, that doesn't help.
You sure?
It really doesn't.
Okay, well, I'm going to stop that then. Let's go to Jim in Matamoros. Jim, you're on.
What's the difference between Veruca Freeze and wart freezes you get out of the big box stores?
I don't know, because I don't know those products individually. Usually wart removers that you get over the counter are made up of 17% salicylic acid. But my guess is if you looked at the active ingredients to those two products, they probably had the same active ingredient.
Well, I was wondering if they left a scar or discoloration of the skin afterwards.
I don't know for sure, because I'm not sure what the what the ingredients are in the Veruca Freeze. Most likely in the wart remover, if you're using a 17% salicylic acid, if you're using it the way it's indicated on the label, you're not going to have a risk of scarring. But anything that's an acid can scar your skin if you leave it on too long.
Okay, Jim, thanks a lot for that one. 800-348-2551 is the number. Dr. Alex Perlmutter joins us today. It's dermatology on the program today. Learned a lot already. And let's go to Valerie in New York. Valerie.
Hi, can you hear me?
You betcha.
Hi, Dr. Alex. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I had chemotherapy in 2016 and a sudden onset of lichen planus, which has been biopsied twice. So how many years I've been suffering with this, and it's literally like ruined my life. I'm not sure what I can do. I have 2% clobetasol, using coconut oil, trying to reach out to see if there's any help on the horizon. I can't walk, hike, bike, ride horses, can't sit for a long period of time. It's just that painful.
So, Valerie, lichen planus can be in multiple areas of the body. Is it in your underwear area?
Yeah, it's
Okay.
What is that?
Yep.
It's a sort of non-specific inflammatory condition that can lead to erosions. It can be pretty dramatic or subtle. It can be on the skin. It can be in the mouth. It can be in the genitals. So there's a wide variety of how it can present. And you said you have an ointment for it. It's been biopsied. Okay. Are you followed by a dermatologist by chance?
Actually, no. It's a gyno that has done the biopsies for me.
So that's
but
not
I'm just
uncommon.
Wondering, is it coincidence? Is the chemotherapy coincidence? Or,
yep.
I mean, am I...
It could be, but not necessarily.
Okay.
I think and this is funny because we get a lot of areas like this. So the mouth, for example, that's technically a dermatologist, but if you're on a gum, maybe ask the dentist. You know, there's these overlap areas, and the genital area is definitely an overlap area. So it's not uncommon that people come to me with a biopsy from their gynecologist, and it's a well-described and frequently treated skin condition like lichen planus. So your best bet is to have an exam and probably someone review the pathology. A dermatologist is someone I'd recommend. It may be that the chemotherapy triggered the lichen planus, but with how much suffering you're going through, you really need someone to examine you and figure out if there also some concordant dryness, because after chemotherapy, the skin can be very dry or irritated, and that might not even be related to lichen planus. So there could be more than one thing going on. I definitely recommend seeing a dermatologist for this problem.
Valerie, thank you so much for the call. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's Dermatology Today on Medical Monday. Dr. Alex Perlmutter joins us, and we'll go to West Suffield, Connecticut. Tom, you're on.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Doctor, I was diagnosed with seborrhea back in January, and I was put on alclomedazone, which was very expensive, and I was supposed to apply it 2 to 3 times a day. And most of the time I did, and some days I wouldn't do it at noontime. And once in a while when I was away, I didn't do it at all, and it would come back. I'm just concerned that once this runs out and I have to buy some more, is this going to be a continuing thing, or will it ever go away? Or can I have something to make it go away?
Hi, Tom. So the message in our notes here says the rash is on your face. So it's seborrhea on your face?
Around my eyes and around my jowls.
Yeah, okay. So that's there's two things that sort of, you know, you're concerned about when the medicine runs out, and I'm also concerned that you're using the topical steroid sort of indefinitely to control the problem. So seborrhea can be managed with non-steroidals as well, and we don't want to use steroids on the face too long because they can thin the skin, and if they're used around the eyes, they can increase your risk for cataracts and glaucoma. So
Is this a steroid I'm using?
Yeah, yep.
Okay.
So for sure, you can start with, this sounds so simple, but if you just buy some dandruff anti-dandruff shampoos, that can be a good starting place, and you can use those on your face, something like Head and Shoulders or Celsin Blue.
Yep.
And then there's other creams available by prescription, which are not steroids, which can be used to control the seborrhea. One of the ones I like to use is
called,
that's a steroid too.
Okay.
So something like ketoconazole. That's a non-steroidal, and we use that on the face for seborrhea all the time.
Okay.
Another one you could use is tacrolimus, which is a non-steroidal that can be used also to control seborrhea.
Okay, so I should ask my dermatologist about changing me to something non-steroidal.
I think so, yes.
All right, Tom, thanks so much. 800-348-2551 is the number if you have a question for Dr. Alex Perlmutter today. We'll go to Clifton Park. And Gary, you're on.
Hello.
Hello, you're on.
Okay. Hi, doctor. I have a blood blister on my lip, my lower lip, and it's I talked to a doctor about it, and he said if it's removed, it'd leave a divot, and you're better off with the blood blister, the raised blood blister, than anything else. He called it something else, a venous something, but can you tell me, have they, and I've heard that they have a laser that will not only remove it, but also will heal it. I think it's pretty much the same time. Can you tell me, can that be removed and without leaving it, a hole in my lip?
Hi, Gary. Yeah, that's a great question. So I think you're probably referring to a venous lake. It's a bluish
blood. Yeah, that's, I think, what they call the venous something.
Mm-hmm. So they're like a bluish kind of pool of blood on the lip. The bigger they are, the harder they are to remove with a laser, but a laser is definitely an option. There's a certain kind of laser called a PDL or a V-beam laser, which specifically targets blood. So if you're using it for like a blood vessel on your face that you don't like, or in your case, this venous lake is full of blood, so it is a very good choice to use to get rid of that without scarring.
Oh, it will get rid of it without leaving a hole in my lip?
Yes, although it might take a couple rounds of treatment depending on how big the venous lake is.
And it's not real big, but it's big enough to see all the time. You know, I can put mirrors back in my house.
Wow. Oh, man, that must be big.
Wow. Okay. Well, Gary, good luck. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. What is a PDL laser? How does that work? I'm a kind of a tech geek.
Oh, geez. Okay, this is... I've got to remember my science. So every laser we use in dermatology, there's about 10 of them. They all
different
have a specific... Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Different frequency. So the ones that are PDL, I think they're 585 nanometers.
Oh, 585, interesting.
595. And so it targets the hemoglobin in the blood.
So it goes through, it passes through the skin.
Yeah.
So interesting, the
technology. So it's nice because, you don't have to cut to get to the problem. It actually will bypass the keratinocytes, which are the layers of skin above the blood.
And it will leave them unscathed altogether.
Yes.
That's incredible.
Yes.
When did you guys start using that?
Oh.
A while?
Yeah.
Really?
Probably in the 80s.
Okay. Well, I don't get out much. Let's go to line six. Greg in Saratoga Lake, you're on.
Oh, hi. Thank you, Doctor, and Ray, per usual. Thank you for your... great guests.
Thank you.
Ray, you have to promise me when I mention this situation that the doctor won't cut me off and you'll never take a call from me again.
Oh, God. Oh, God. I can't make that promise. But
I recently read and a couple of people who had tried it for, let's say, small warts or skin and extrusions, very small ones. You take kind of the over-the-counter compound W type stuff, put it on, and now don't shut me off the phone, Ray.
Take
a small piece of duct tape and you put it over the wart or whatever the little growth is, and the theory is it starves it from oxygen and it's non-toxic. You leave it on for a day or two, you pull it off, and guess what? You have a little crystalline formation that you can dig off with a
Greg, is this a TikTok thing? Stop. No, all right, go ahead, doctor.
No, I'm absolutely serious. All I'm right. absolutely serious, doctor. And I can't see where it would be dangerous. And the idea of, starving it from oxygen, duct tape would certainly do that.
Okay, so let's talk about this, Greg. So first of all, I'm going to assume, again, these warts are maybe on your feet or your hands. Warts can really be anywhere. But we'll talk about warts on the feet. Warts are a manifestation of the HPV virus, and that virus doesn't need oxygen to survive. So, it doesn't need calories or food. So we don't really need to starve them. With warts, what they do, they are so smart. They basically burrow into our skin and evade the surveillance of our immune system. So the general way that we can remove a wart is to somehow trigger our immune system to realize it's there. So what you're describing is completely fine.
Really?
Yeah, you're just using those Compound W preparations tend to be either 17% salicylic acid or 40% salicylic acid. And you're putting it on the skin, and that's irritating the surface of the skin such that your body will say, oh, there's a problem down there. Look, my skin's so irritated. And when it goes to figure out what the injury is or what the problem is, it hopefully will find the HPV virus and start to attack it. So I think what you're doing is just fine.
Wow, Greg. How about that?
Yeah. But Ray, you have to promise now you won't shut me off next time I call up. Thank you very much, doctor.
Thank you for the call. Hey, we have to take a break, Greg. I'm going to cut you off there. 800-348-2551 is the number. Dr. Alex Perlmutter is with us, and we'll get back to more of your calls and emails in a moment. Medical Monday on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. We're joined by Dr. Alex Perlmutter of Capital District Dermatology in Glenmont. And let's wrap through a few emails here, doctor, and then we'll hit the phones for the home stretch. This is from Nancy. I'd like to ask if taking collagen powder is helpful to prevent or reverse wrinkles as one gets older.
So that's a common question I get these days in the office, too. Thanks for asking it. So there's no evidence-based research showing that ingesting collagen in its sort of put together final form will then be digested by the body and then remade in the body as collagen that would go to the skin. So if you think about it, a protein, collagen is a protein. The way our body will digest proteins is into its amino acids. So that's what actually crosses from our stomach into our bloodstream. And so that doesn't necessarily get rebuilt in the body as collagen.
Yeah.
So no, unfortunately not.
So as we get older, our skin gets thinner, and it's because we are losing the collagen underneath the skin?
Yes, yes.
It's such a shame.
I know.
All right, this email from Mike in Rexford. I'm Irish and have had a lot of sun exposure, so I have a lot of keratosis. My doctor put me on imiquimod in September to treat the keratosis. This produced a lot of red spots on my skin, even when it wasn't treated. These red spots still haven't gone away. Is that normal? What can I expect? That's from Mike in Rexford.
That's interesting, Mike. No, that's not typical. So imiquimod is a medicine that we use to boost the immune system and to fight off some things. In your case, it's fighting off a precancerous lesion, I think, is what you said, called an actinic keratosis. So while you're taking the imiquimod or using it on your skin, it should create some inflammation that will leave the skin red, but it shouldn't linger. So I think that might mean that either they're not treated or maybe you had a reaction, an allergic reaction to the spots. I'm not sure, but you might want to follow up with your dermatologist about that.
All right, one more email here for now. Oh, by the way, you know, do you see the note in the right corner of the screen?
Yes.
Joe Makowicz, the screener, just giving me a hard time. You know what? It was spelled wrong. I didn't say it right because it was spelled wrong, Joe. Screen the calls. I've had several skin cancers removed from my face. I'm 70 and fair skin. My dermatologist suggested having full face chemical burn done. What can you tell me about doing that? And that is from Steve.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for writing in. Full face chemical burn. I'm extrapolating a little bit here, but I think maybe they want you to use 5-fluorouracil. This is a chemotherapy medicine that we use frequently in patients who had a lot of skin cancer on their face and have a lot of sun damage on their face. And this is a medicine that is a cream, and you put it on the skin, and usually you use it for about 3 weeks at a time, and it will find the sun-damaged areas and clear them before they turn into cancer, which is an amazing thing there. So if that's, in fact, what they're talking about, 5-fluorouracil, I really like this treatment. I think it's a wonderful preventative agent when it comes to skin cancers such as squamous cell skin cancers and basal cell skin cancers. And that, yeah, it's something you should talk more about with your doctor.
All right, we are joined today by Dr. Alex Perlmutter from Capital District Dermatology in Glenmont. The lines are loaded. Doctor, you'll have to come back at some point because Again, it's been a couple of few years at least since we've had a dermatologist on this program, and obviously people are ready. Patrick in Clifton Park, you're on.
Hello. I've had some skin cancer. I had a mole surgery on my behind my left ear, and I get checked out pretty regularly by a dermatologist. I've grown a beard. I do have some like scaly spots of skin on my face. Before I go in for my next checkup, should I shave the beard off so they get a better view of the skin?
Hi, Patrick. Thanks for calling in. Yes, for sure. So two things I'd recommend. Scaly spots to our eyes can look like a precancer, and they can also look like dry skin. So I would definitely have your beard shaved, and also use a moisturizer in the week leading up to your visit with the dermatologist so that they can at least rule out that it's not just dry skin.
Okay.
All right, Patrick, thanks a lot for the call. And now we zip out to Pittsfield, Massachusetts. Teresa, you're on.
Hi, doctor. Thanks so much for taking my call. I have a lot of sun damage on my face. I routinely go to my dermatologist and recently undergo light treatment. I just want to know if that is effective, and is there any other form of treatment?
Hi, Teresa. Thanks for calling in. I really like using blue light treatment to help prevent skin cancers on the face, to treat the sun damage. It's termed photodynamic therapy, and what it does is you put medicine on the face, which is a sensitizer to the blue light, and then you sit under the blue light for about 16 minutes, and the genetically damaged skin reacts and is sort of killed, if you will, or damaged, such that you get rid of that bad skin. It's not foolproof, so it doesn't totally remove your risk of skin cancer going forward, which you probably know because you've had to do it several times, but it does dramatically decrease your risk of skin cancer. Another thing you can do, I mentioned earlier on the call, is using 5-fluorouracil cream, which is a topical chemotherapy cream, to treat spots that are precancerous on the skin. And that absolutely has to be done in conjunction with a dermatologist.
Teresa.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Tell me, doctor, about this blue light treatment. How does it work?
So this is again challenging my science memory, but that's okay. It's good.
This when is you put not the, new, too? Something I should have known about decades ago?
Okay. All right, so whatever. When you use this medicine, which is called levulinic acid, it creates a protoporphin in the skin, and that is reactive to sunlight. So areas that express the protoporphin more react more to the light. In this case, it's blue light, not sunlight, but it's blue light. And so it destroys it because that protein is present in the skin.
So interesting. Why does it have to be blue? That was kind of where I was going with this.
Well, people also do red light. There's different ways to do it. Actually, this is really funny. In Europe, what they do is they paint this medicine on the face that creates that protoporphin, which is a sensitized chemical, and they tell their patients to go walk around outside for a few days. So they use it in a very uncontrolled sense. They use the lights, you know, the sunlight's UV radiation to manifest the same effect.
Well, that keeps overhead down.
Yeah.
Certainly. Exactly. Let's go to Peter in Wappingers Falls. Peter, you're on. Peter.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Hi, Ray, how are you?
Pretty good,
old
man.
Buddy. I have itchy skin. I'm an old guy, and I did have lumbar and cervical operations about 8 or 9 years ago. And as a result, I don't know, the cervical nerves got injured or something, but I have itching that I use a topical over-the-counter anti-itching cream on at night just to calm them down so that I can go to sleep. But every once in a while, the itching is right around my thumb on both hands and the index finger, the pointer, and that soft tissue in between, and then it sort of fades going up the arm, but very strongly again in the crook of the elbow, in the soft part on the inside of the elbow.
Okay,
the cream does fairly well to let me go to sleep, but every once in a while I'll be driving, as I am now, and it'll flare up, usually on my left around my left thumb and finger, and it is so incredibly itchy that I just want to tear a hole in my skin, and in fact have come to the blood several times.
Don't do that.
So I'm just wondering, is there a cream? Is there something that I can get that just? I mean, I don't know what can stop this.
Go ahead, Doc.
Sure. So what you're describing sounds a lot like a neuropathic pain, which I think you hit the nail on the head with your concept that it's coming from your cervical spine. So if I haven't examined you, of course, I don't know if there's rash at those sites, but I definitely think that's a strong possibility. So what we do in this case is we generally cannot get away with creams, although something like a topical lidocaine may help. But think of this as a nerve problem. And in your case, it's not manifesting as pain. It's manifesting as itch. If you were in my office, I might end up prescribing something like gabapentin to you or a Lyrica, which is pregabalin. It basically tries to calm down those irritated nerves. But what I'll say is I don't think it's a coincidence that you're experiencing this worse when you're driving. So just make sure when you're driving, your posture is good and you're not in a position such that you're putting more pressure on your cervical spine.
Interesting. Peter.
I do take gabapentin.
Okay.
Well, there's a wide range of dosing you can use.
600 milligrams. Huh?
How much are you taking?
I'm sorry?
How much are you taking, Peter?
I'm taking about 600 milligrams in the morning and 600 milligrams at night.
That's a good dose. You could still go higher. But again, I would think more about the posture and the fact that it happens when you're driving, because that's something non-medical that you can possibly improve.
Okay, Peter.
I don't know how to improve it.
I
don't know how to improve it, doctor. I mean,
no, I get you. And when you're driving,
it's when I'm sitting at my desk.
Oh.
Yeah. So when someone is having this kind of a problem and it's manifested on the skin, right? It's you feel it as an itch, but ultimately it's probably the nerves that are the problem. And if, you know, I'll often help with gabapentin or something like that, but ultimately you probably need to speak to someone who can take a closer look at your spine. So a neurologist, sometimes physical therapy is utilized to help calm those nerves down, or injections by a pain management physician.
All right, Peter, thanks a lot. Your connection's a little sketchy there, so we're going to move on here. Let's go to Claremont, New York. Bruce, you're on.
Claremont, New York?
That's Bruce. You. Go ahead.
Okay. I have a problem that stems back almost 9 years to when one of my daughters, who was a nurse, brought MRSA back to our home. So I got 3 MRSA sores on my arm above my elbow. And they took, they never really went away. I was given mupirocin as a antibiotic that might help. It never worked. I also tried hydrocodone cream and hydrocortisone cream, and that didn't work. Besides the 3 spots, there was also a rough patch of skin that is also inflamed. The thing that did seem to help was to constantly treat it with triple antibiotic ointment. And then recently my GP had me take a very strong antibiotic, I forget the name, Zolid something. It's a generic of a strong antibiotic. I took it for 10 days. It had dietary restrictions I had to follow. And the result is 2 of the 3 have disappeared, and the largest one has gotten smaller. So my doctor says, well, we could do that same antibiotic again, or we could remove the remaining one surgically. I just wondered if you had any thoughts on the treatment plus the scaly patch that's next to it.
Okay, so it's a little hard for me. You know, we as dermatologists rely on our vision a lot.
Yeah, you can't really diagnose exactly over the phone here.
But it sounds like if it got much smaller on that given antibiotic, I think it's promising that it would continue to shrink. You might just need more of it. And then the other thing I'll say, sometimes with a chronic sore, injury, wound that's within reach, just make sure you're not touching it. because a lot of times there becomes a secondary callusing effect. You know, if there's a growth there, we kind of touch it and check it now and then with our fingers, we end up actually creating, and the analogy is sort of like a callus on your shoe if you wore a shoe too tight.
Yeah.
And so there can be a secondary effect of, I've got a sore and now I have this callus effect. So just make sure that you're not touching it too much. And I think that, yeah, the second round of antibiotics would be preferable to surgery, although, of course, I can't say for sure because I can't see the lesion.
Bruce, thanks a lot. We appreciate it very much. This email from Diane in Saugerties, and I love this question. I hear 20 minutes of sun to get enough vitamin D, but is that 20 minutes in a bathing suit or 20 minutes in a ski parka? Does it matter? And that's from Diane.
I don't know. I don't have a good answer for that. Even the American Academy of Dermatology just says 20 minutes. So probably if you have your arms and your face exposed, that's enough body surface area to absorb 20 minutes of sun. I don't think you need to be in a bathing suit.
Fair enough. Let's go now to Mount Kisco. Beautiful Mount Kisco. Audrey, you're on. You got about a minute.
Hi, Sam. Thank you. I have a recurring rash that comes every month, and I have creams that make it go away for a while, but then the itches come back, and they're exactly in the same places. And I wonder if you could tell me anything about that.
Okay.
Did you get that behind the train announcements?
Yeah, the train station. That's exciting. So that's really interesting, actually. There are some things that are some rashes that are hormonally linked. One thing I would question is there anything you take on an as-needed basis every month? So what I mean is there's something called a fixed drug reaction. And if you tend to take something like Advil or Motrin every month for cramps or whatever it might be, those are that's a condition where the rash erupts in reaction to a medication, but erupts at the exact same place on our body. And it's a little arbitrary.
Huh.
So it might be the left thigh for you or the lips for someone else. But the one thing that's really unique about it is that it keeps coming back in the same place.
Do you know why it picks a certain spot?
No.
That's so interesting.
Not at all.
Audrey, we're about out of time. This email from Alicia. Do any of the over-the-counter treatments for dark spots from sun damage really work?
So that's a great question. So one of the few ingredients, so it always comes back to, you have to flip the bottle over and look at the ingredients list. Hydroquinone is available over the counter, and it's often in part of the makeup of these lightening creams, and it does help. It absolutely does help. The only thing with hydroquinones is you have to limit how much you use it, because if you overuse it, meaning you use it for too many weeks or months in a row, you can paradoxically get darkening of the skin.
Oh, that's so interesting. All right. Well, Dr. Alex Perlmutter, we are done. What do you think? Went pretty fast.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Support comes from Dr. Jian Shen, providing personalized, multifaceted clinical plans working to help patients achieve a pain-free new year. envisionspinesurgery.com for details. Once again, thanks to Dr. Alexis Perlmutter of Capital District Dermatology in Glenmont for joining us today. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Joe Mankiewicz screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow we talk antiques with Mark Lawson of Mark Lawson Antiques. So start rummaging through the attic. Get a treasure. We'll find out if it's worth anything. Tomorrow at 2:00.